Well, hey, what's going on? Happy Saturday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds live on YouTube. But first, let's recap the Reds game from Friday night. Reds traveling to Arlington to take on the defending world champion Texas Rangers. It was Graham Ashcraft taking on Nathan Eovaldi in the first game of the series. And the Reds got off to a good start. Second batter up for the Reds, Ellie De La Cruz walked. Then Spencer Steer followed him up with a walk. And then Christian Encarnacion Strand flew out to right field. Ellie De La Cruz tagged up and took third base. Then with the next batter at the plate, Tyler Stevenson, Spencer Steer took off for second base. Rangers catcher Jonah Heim's throw went into the outfield trying to throw him out. Ellie De La Cruz scored. Ellie De La Cruz's base running causing havoc right off the get-go once again. 1-0 Reds. Reds would, however, end up stranding runners on second and third in that inning, and that ended up being probably a pretty big deal as this game went along. In the bottom of the second, Graham Ashcraft gave up a solo home run to Evan Carter, tying the game up at one, but that was really Ashcraft's only blemish on the day. He ended up going 6 1/3, gave up 7 hits, just that one earned run, no walks, and 3 strikeouts. Very strong start from Graham Ashcraft. Reds offense, though, just could not get anything on the board, and Lucas Sims would give up a solo home run in the 8th inning to Marcus Semien to put the Rangers up 2-1, and that would be more than enough on this night. Reds finish the night with just 3 hits and fall 2-1 to the Rangers. Reds are now 14-10 on the season, and that is the third time in 5 games the Reds have scored 1 run or less. 2 of those, of course, were shutouts. The few positives from the Reds side, Ellie De La Cruz walked twice in the game. His on-base percentage is now up to .419. Spencer Steer was on base 3 times in the game, breaking his slump with a hit. And Jonathan India had 2 of the Reds' 3 hits. And India really hit the ball hard. He had exit velocities of 106, 98, and 94 on his 3 balls put in play. But, as mentioned, the rest of the lineup did not do so well, and we talked about that a lot on Chatterbox Reds Live coming up in just a minute. But before we get to that, let's hear what Graham Ashcraft had to say right after the game.
Cutter elite tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I was able to get it where I wanted to tonight. I was able to keep it up and into the lefties. I was able to backdoor them. I was able to get the sinker up and into the righties and got a couple good sinkers up and away to the lefties. And I mean, it was just a good night overall with the stuff tonight and got to flash the change up a little bit. So I was pretty happy about that to see that finally was able to keep it in the zone. So
how were you able to be so efficient?
After that last start, just didn't feel right mechanically and kind of got back to doing some of the basics and just trying to focus on like driving everything towards the net and kind of got back to that today. And I mean, you could tell, I mean, I felt like I was filling it up. So, I mean, it felt like a really good night.
Pitch to Evan Carter. Was that a cutter that just got too much play?
The home run?
Yeah, the home run.
Yeah, it was a cutter supposed to be up and in. I yanked it down, and he's a low ball hitter. He likes it down and in, and I mean, it was just the pitch for him, and he was able to get to it. So,
what was the atmosphere like tonight? It's a defending World Series champs. It's a close game. What was it like for you?
Oh, I mean, I feel like that was definitely one of the loudest games I've pitched in. I mean, it was if that's what playoff baseball feels like, I mean, and that's a hell of a game. I mean, that was fun to be a part of and fun to experience.
How were you able to keep your personal emotions in check tonight? Or did it help you?
I feel like it helped me more than anything because there was a lot of emotions on this day last year. I mean, the exact day, on the 26th. So I felt like this year it was a little bit easier to know, like, all right, she's with me. I'm here in her state for her team, pitching against them. And I just knew that I just had to go out and just do my best, and that's all I could do.
Grandma will be happy with the final line, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And here's Reds manager David Bell.
Graham pitched certainly well enough to win.
He sure did. I mean, very pitch efficient. Really did it all with one pitch, which is saying so much for that pitch. The cutter was outstanding. Got a ton of ground balls. Was able to get some quick outs. And, I mean, the one the one cutter they were able to get to. But other than that, yeah, he pitched a great game.
He was efficient as well. I mean, you went to get him, but he wasn't even near 100 pitches at that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit different environment here with a little bit of humidity and heat. I mean, he was getting a little fatigued, just that many up and downs going into the seventh inning. But you're right, he was very efficient, and that's the one thing about that pitch. He gets a lot of ground balls with it, and he can get the early out. So, you know, later in the season, that's probably what's going to lead to some complete games for Graham.
You guys got your run without a hit. Hits were tough to come by tonight, but there's five walks they surrendered in the first five innings of missed opportunities, unfortunately, tonight.
Yeah, we didn't get it done tonight, but we will. We will in the future, and we'll continue to work and look for those opportunities, and our guys will come through. I mean, it does say a lot for Eovaldi. You know, their guy was outstanding. I mean, he's got four pitches that, you know, he can throw at any time and has great movement on those pitches. He's able to pitch around the walks. He walked, I believe, five, something like that, and was able to pitch around that. So it says a lot about who he is.
Well, I got to be honest, finding a deep drive of the game, it was a very tough task in this one. The top five furthest hit balls of the evening were all from Rangers players. The Reds' furthest hit ball, ironically, was Nick Martini's pinch hit fly out, hit 302 feet to end the game. But nonetheless, our deep drive of the day is sponsored by DSC. DSC, Deep South Commodities, is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production. They specialize in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC, and an extra thanks for dealing with not a whole lot of deep drives lately from the Cincinnati Reds. All right, let's check out scores around the NL Central from Friday night, and just more rough news for the Reds. The Brewers won 7-6 over the Yankees in 11 innings. The Brewers are now 7-1 in one-run games this season. The Cubs, they beat the Red Sox 7-1. Cubs are now 10-3 in their last 13 games. The Cardinals, they beat the Mets 4-2. Pirates, they did lose. They fell 3-0 to the Giants. So, your NL Central standings on Saturday morning are as follows. Milwaukee Brewers leading the way at 17-8. Cubs are 17-9. Reds 14-12. Pirates 13-14. They fall below 500 for the first time this season. And the Cardinals sit at 12-14. And the Reds, believe it or not, they still hold a playoff spot. They still have the third playoff spot as the Mets lost. So the Reds are 14-10. They are a half game up on a playoff spot. Actually, they're a game and a half ahead of the team after the Mets. So really, thankfully, the rest of the NL outside of the Cubs and Brewers aren't really playing all that well. All right, well, without further ado, here's myself and Trace Fowler trying to do our best to have some fun conversation and something after a really ugly game from the Cincinnati Reds.
Watched every pitch, though. Watched every pitch, Nick. And I'm more sad than anything. I don't know where you're at, but I'm just kind of sad about it.
Yeah, just, I don't know. I guess it's good to see Jake Fraley's alive. That made me feel a little good in the ninth. That's about all I got right now.
Right.
Yeah, just the offense is pretty rough right now. Not much more you could say.
No, there isn't. And we'll do our best to sit here and try to sort through all this and figure out, how was your day before you turned the game on? Was your day semi all right? Was it going okay? Or are you guys getting nervous? You're on baby watch there?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, when it's the third time around, I don't feel like there's, I mean, I don't know, right. maybe my wife can speak differently. She's right. The one who should speak on this, not me.
Correct.
But no, I had a great day. I got to take my oldest daughter, I guess she's going to be the oldest daughter here in a minute, to a dance. So that was nice. It was the third time we've gone. First two times, we lasted about 20 minutes, and she's like, "Let's go get ice cream, Dad." Tonight, she made it all the way to the end, which is why the stream was put up late and sent to the wrong destination, because I wasn't expecting to get home later. But I'm glad I got home later. It was a nice time.
Yeah, No, it's not that big of a deal. First and foremost, let me say this. The fact that selecting the wrong input on YouTube doesn't allow, and it allows you to change the input in real time. The fact that you can't just change it in real time and hit go live, which I've done before, by the way, I'm not putting this blame on you. I think if I put the blame on you tonight, that's like putting the blame on Lucas Sims tonight. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, is there some truth behind it? Maybe like the slightest bit, but we can't go there. I mean, Lucas Sims, I know he's going to probably be on the rundown. I see him on here, but I don't know how you watch that game and you get yourself into a spot where you're upset about really anybody that's pitching baseballs. So, let's do it. I know I sound somber and I know I'm sounding sad. Sometimes you need people to pick you up, but I'm human too. You know, I watched that same game everyone else watched and I don't have much for you because I'm not trying to overreact. I am concerned. I am concerned because we can't keep making the excuse that, well, we had a guy on the mound that was a really good pitcher. It's like, well, we're going to face a lot of pretty good pitchers over the next 30 days. Like, you face good teams, you're probably going to face pretty decent arms. That's how it goes. Like, if the Reds played the Reds, how many nights would we say they weren't throwing against a pretty good arm, right? Like, 4 of the 5 days? Maybe you could spare me Nick Martinez. But outside of that, you're going to make an excuse like, oh, we ran into Graham Ashcraft tonight. He's a pretty good pitcher. We ran into Hunter Green. He's a pretty good pitcher. We ran into Nick Lodolo. He's an elite pitcher. Like, we can't keep doing that. Got to find a way to have competitive at-bats. And that's maybe the thing that I'm most disappointed in. Let's do Graham Ashcraft first. We'll try to stay positive. I'm going to try to stay on the rundown here just to make sure that we stay on track. What else is there to say about it? I think that ultimately he competed. He did a really good job. I didn't really agree with the concept of him coming out when he had a chance pretty much to lose the game there with the guy on second base. I kind of was like, you know what? He's battled his tail off to get to this point. Like, I'd rather lose with Graham Ashcraft out there than to see him stand in the dugout on the top step and just watch all of his work go to waste. And that didn't happen. So shout out to Lucas Sims for at least getting out of that inning. Give David Bell credit for I guess making the right move there. There's going to be some people that obviously disagree as we talk about Lucas Sims later and the decision maybe to leave him in the extra inning or whatever, coming back out that second inning for Lucas. He gave up 2 runs, guys. Like, we gave up 2 runs, Nick. And if you say that before the game started, you'd be thrilled to death. So I thought Ashcraft located the ball relatively well. He had a multitude of pitches that were working in his favor. And let's face it, he's facing a really good lineup. And I don't want to say he couldn't have thrown the ball any better because that might be dishonorable to him. Maybe he could have because he's a good pitcher, but I don't think he could. I don't think it's realistic to expect him to throw the ball a whole lot better. Nick, you have anything to add to Ashcraft?
Yeah, no, I thought he, you know, pitched to the ballpark that he was pitching in. I mean, he did get by with one that was a home run in 18 ballparks, but it wasn't a homer in this ballpark. And
that's true.
You make your own luck. You don't walk anyone. I'm never going to say, oh, well, he gave a lot of hard hit balls. Well, he didn't walk anyone. So, you know, when you're in this kind of ballpark, that's the most important thing, is not to give away free base runners. And this Rangers lineup's really good. I know they haven't, if you look at their offensive numbers overall, you're not going to be wowed, but 1 through 9, they have the lineup that we thought the Reds were going to have 1 through 9, to be honest. They're really good lineup. And for Ashcraft to get through 6 1/3, just give up that one run, pretty impressive stuff from him. And he needed a good start, because his last time out, I thought was pretty bad. I thought it was a pretty disappointing start from him. So it was really good to see him bounce back. And Reds need it. The Reds need this. The strength of the team is the pitching right now. There's no question about it. So you're going to have a lot of these type of starts.
Yeah, and that's the scary part, is that it feels as if right now, let's get into the offense, because that's what most people want to talk about. That's where all the frustration lies. And I guess when I say offense, some people are going to say, what offense? Or, well, you know, what they don't, you'd be disrespectful to offenses by calling this an offense. I do feel like momentum's a real thing in baseball. I do think that first inning was a little bit of like, it was like a little bit of just like a deflating air coming out of a tire or something along those lines. Like, it was just, And I know they got no hits. They ended up getting a run. It's not like they came out with nothing. But for Jonathan India to have two hits tonight, and one of them not be the opportunity for him to drive the guys in, that's tough. CES gets up there, doesn't drive guys into them. But going back to that first inning, Nick, felt like they had some pretty good at bats, and it felt like they were kind of being disruptive a bit on the base paths. Tyler Stevenson, I think, if I remember right, he just takes second. They just let him have second base, and you're thinking, okay, base hit, we could take a 3-0 lead. You're feeling really good about yourself then. And instead, they wind up with just one, and you kind of started thinking, about midway through this game, I started thinking, that's probably going to be something we're going to look back on and wish we would have capitalized on, and they didn't. So it kind of feels like, Nick, I guess the last point I'll make about this Reds offense, it kind of feels like Virginia basketball in a way. Like, it's just kind of gross. I don't know how to explain it. But they're competing. They're in baseball games. But it doesn't feel sustainable is where I'm coming from, right? And I'm sure we'll get into maybe some of the guys on this offense that we need to get going. But anything that you overarching thoughts on just the way tonight went offensively?
I mean, look, there's some good individual pieces that are playing well. Ellie De La Cruz is playing incredible. Just his plate discipline is a marvel to watch. Spencer Steer, good to see him actually get some results. I never thought he was slumping because I thought he was hitting the ball hard. I thought he was having good competitive at-bats. Just the results weren't there. So good to see him get the results tonight. Good to see Jonathan India. He had three balls hit hard. Two were actually officially hard. Another one was 93, 95's hard. So still, I mean, pretty close to three hard hit balls. One of them was over 100 miles an hour. So really good to see from him. But the problem is you have other guys that are slumping. You have CES slumping. You have Candelario slumping. You have Will Benson really slumping. And then you have two guys in the lineup that shouldn't be in the lineup, in Espinal and Fairchild. They should not be playing against right-handed pitching. And
yes,
Jake Fraley's alive. We saw that tonight. He had a helmet on. He was coming in to bench it. So he's alive. So I hope he's in the lineup tomorrow against old Mikey Lorenzen. That helps. TJ Friedl is set to start a rehab assignment next week. So there's two to at least put that in. And that's where your lineup just is a lot deeper. Just those two guys. I mean, TJ Friedl's not going to change your offense, but he's just one less hole. So when other guys are struggling, there's just not holes in the lineup. And right now, I mean, you can get some nice rallies going, but you can't get it across. Not because these guys aren't clutch, because these guys aren't good.
There you go. You can say it. You're allowed to say it. I mean, you're allowed. Go ahead. I think it's fair to say. I think we can meet in the middle on this a little bit, right? I think you're a guy that wants to defend some guys that get kind of punched down on when they don't really technically deserve it, right? And Espinal's maybe one of those guys. He came over here. His job wasn't to play every single day. His job was to be a fill-in piece from time to time, play good defense, maybe even be a defensive replacement towards the end of the game. And it's like, oh, you know, Espinal, that's kind of cute type thing. Then you throw him into the mix where now there's this expectation that he's going to be Matt McClain or, you know, whoever else, name the other guy, maybe Jonathan India. And that's just not that wasn't what we were getting. So there's this frustration grows and grows and grows and grows. And I'll say this, like, the more and more you look at it, and again, I know you can't just blame like one or two guys in a lineup for the whole entire offensive lineup, but like, your stars got to be stars. And I know we don't have stars when I say that, but like, your guys that you brought in that you thought were going to be your offensive production, like, they got to produce. CES and Candy, I mean, let's stop candy, candy coating it or sugar coating it? That's not the right word, candy coating it. I might start saying that. But let's stop sugar coating. Like, it's been terrible. It's been terrible. Now, can it get better? We all hope. But this isn't rocket science, man. It's just not rocket science. We can sit here and blame injuries, and some of it has to do with injuries. There's no doubt. But some of it has to do with these guys. Some of these guys are just not playing well at all. And I don't know how good they are. But, you know, if you're one of the folks that believe that CES is an actual consistent big league hitter and he just needs some time, then don't hit the panic button. If you think Jamer Candelario is going to replicate some of his past seasons outside of what I think it was 2019 and maybe 2021. I don't have it in front of me, but he had two seasons where he wasn't very good. But for the most of his career, he's been pretty solid outside of two seasons. If you think he's going to get back to the good old days, then don't hit the panic button. But, you know, maybe we're going to go on an offensive tear for 1 month because these guys all have to come back to water finds its level. But as I said before, and I'm not overreacting right now, I'm just going to keep it, I'm going to keep it honest, is that if they can't start to turn it around soon, I don't want to bury us, right, Nick? Like, let's face it, last year, this team was a playoff team for the vast majority of the year. The reason they didn't make the playoffs, though, is because they dug themselves such a big hole in the first month of the season that it was damn near impossible to dig yourself back out of it. I guess I'm just saying I'm openly concerned about this offense right now of just burying us or digging us a hole for the next 14 to 15 days that we might not be able to get back out of. And now that sounds like an overreaction, but that's just my genuine thoughts after watching what has been like three or four terrible offensive days out of five or six.
Candelaria has been terrible. I mean, like, at Christian Encarnacion Strand, at least there's been some moments. Like, he hasn't been good. But if you were expecting smooth sailing all year from Christian Encarnacion Strand, that's probably a little glass way more than half full.
Right.
Jammer Candelaria, I mean, there's no stat that says anything he's doing is good. It's all bad. He struck out three times tonight. I mean, you brought him in to be a guy that could have competitive at-bats against a guy like Nathan Eovaldi. I mean, that's literally, like, he's a switch hitter. He's supposed to give you the competitive at-bats while the other guys are slumping. And right now, the guy that's giving the competitive at-bats is Ellie De La Cruz. Like, could you imagine, like, 3 weeks ago being like, yeah, Ellie De La Cruz, man, he's going to be the one. He's working these walks. He's grinding out every at-bat. His at-bats are just majestical to watch. He's so consistent. And Jaber Candelaria is the guy coming up there, striking out three times. It's wild. I don't think it's going to keep up, but
right.
You can only say that so long. I can't say it every day. I mean,
yeah.
At some point, he's got to start hitting. And, God, if he doesn't start hitting, that's a long three-year contract.
Well, he has done this before. He has done this before, Nick. I'm sure I'll give you a minute here to pull up his baseball reference page. But if he does have a bad year this year, and again, this is ridiculously early to talk about. But if he does, I'm not gonna be overly like, okay, you know, you got 3 years worth of nothing, because he could bounce back like he has bounced back before. But having said that, I could care less about next year right now, if we're being honest. So, you know, I'm at a loss for words because there's no other answers. There's not an answer. But what do you got? What do you got in front of you?
I found something good. I found something good. It took some digging, but we found something good on Candelaria.
Please.
He's been terrible in April and March. I don't know why anyone hasn't brought this up. If you look at his career splits, his OPS is the worst in the month of April and March. But if you click on it, his first year, he was great in April. He has not had a 700 OPS in the last 5 years in April. So it has been his worst month. What we got? 5 more days? All right, Jamer. You got till May.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's something about, maybe it's Cinco de Mayo. Maybe that's the day. I'm trying to think of a holiday in May that we can get excited about. I don't know. You know what I would also say too, like, people can say, like, they're scoring 0 runs like the other day, and they're scoring 5 runs in a series like against the Mariners. They're scoring a run tonight, but it's the way that they look. Like, there's not even that many chances. They got 3 hits. Thank God Eovaldi walked how many guys? Like, if Eovaldi wasn't walking guys left and right, and to be honest, you mentioned Ellie De La Cruz. I'm not trying to take away anything that he's done from the standpoint of walking more. I do think he had some really good at-bats, certainly had some good at-bats against Wheeler, to where I don't think they were, like, purposely walking him. But right now, I'm almost like wondering to myself, like, are they just walking him on purpose because they ultimately know that he's maybe the only guy that can hurt him? Like, and the crazy thing about saying that is that can't be true because he's just going to steal second base. Like, you can't just go into an at bat and be like, I'm willing to give up a double here. There's no way. But I'm starting to believe it. Like, I'm starting to be like, how is this guy around the zone every single time everybody else walks up? And then Ellie walks up, and the next thing you know, they miss it. Four straight pitches, it's a walk. I mean, is that how bad this offense is right now? That they're just like, you know what? That's fine. We'll let him get to second base, but no one else can drive him in. I don't know.
I don't think it's that. I think it's the whole, like, in basketball, you don't want to get posterized. Like, they all know. They don't want to be on the other end of one of the Ellie De La Cruz 115-mile-per-hour, 475-foot bombs. I think it's more than that. I think that's why they're pitching him like that. I don't think that's going to keep up. I think teams are going to be like, this guy's walking a lot. Let's make him actually, you know, beat us with the bat. But I think that's what it is more than anything. I can't imagine any teams stupid enough to a team that's struggling, putting the fastest guy on the planet on, or the fastest guy in baseball on base and allowing him to manufacture a run. That seems kind of dumb.
John in the chat asked, why does no one ever mention the Reds hitting coach? Because I think that's the easiest scapegoat that there is, man. I'm not trying to, like, this is just my opinion, so take it for what it's worth. I guess I'm going to speak as if it's fact, because in my mind it's a fact. I think the hitting coach is just a glorified psychologist. You know, they're over there to try to help where they can. These guys are big leaguers, man. They know all the data. They got everything in front of them. You don't just, like, one week change your swing or something along those lines and magically everything gets fixed. It just doesn't work that way. You know, if it was about the hitting coach, then I think that hitting coaches would make a significant amount of money. They would be sought after. Instead, it's like, you know, what school did that guy's buddy go to, and does he know the manager, or does he know somebody? You know, it's more or less like I couldn't even, like, I don't sound like an idiot right now. Maybe I sound like an idiot, but I bet right now, if you asked more than 50% of the fans in Reds fandom what the name of the hitting coach is, no one's going to know. And I would say that's the case for almost every other fan base too. Like, hey, who's the Yankees hitting coach? I don't know. Like, I don't know, but I know Aaron Judge is good. Like, it doesn't matter who the hitting coach is. I'm not going to ever say it's a hitting coach problem. Like, these guys are, they're big leaguers. They can figure it out.
I had to look it up. I didn't remember. It's Joel.
What's his name?
Joel McKeithen. This was the same hitting coach that, was Spencer Steer's hitting coach his entire big league career so far. It's the same hitting coach that worked with Will Benson last year. It's the same hitting coach that, you know, you can go on and on.
Will Benson's been bad too, man.
No, but I'm saying, like, Will Benson was great last year. He was the same hitting coach last year.
Oh, I know. I got your point. It was just a stream of consciousness thought. I had to get that out in the open. We've been picking on everybody else. I might as well just, I'll add, I like Will, but I got to add him into that mix too. He's been bad. There's not been a whole lot of people that have been good, for being honest. Right?
Ellie and Steer and Tyler Stevenson.
And you know what I would also say? People are going to think we're Stuart Fairchild defenders at all cost. Stuart Fairchild has no business playing in these baseball games when there's a right-hander throwing. Like, no business at all. He shouldn't be playing in this game. It's not what his job is. Like, we're asking the three-point specialist to go out here and play great defense on Kevin Durant. It's not happening. We can convince ourselves that we'd like for it to happen, but it's just not going to happen. So,
I mean, there's three guys in the lineup tonight that were not supposed to be in the lineup when you constructed this roster.
If Fraley was able to pinch hit in the last inning, is he, like, just barely getting back where he's just kind of like, I don't know, if you need me, coach, I'm available for one at bat, but I'm still not feeling great? Because go ahead.
I'm guessing it was a thing. Well, I also wonder if Jonathan India is not 100% also, because he's only DH so far. And so that was also part of it. And they, you know, Fraley's like, yeah, I mean, I'm better, but they said, all right, well, let's let you get in the cage before the game, get batting practice. We'll put you in the lineup on Saturday. And then it was more of a desperation pinch hit. Is he pinch hit for Santiago Espinal? Espinal's not going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. He didn't pinch it. He was going to pinch it for Fairchild. But it was more of like, I think, a desperation pinch hit than anything else.
Maybe so. I'm trying to hold out hope that this is going to get better. It doesn't look like it. I mean, I can tell you that. It doesn't look like it. If I had to compare it to something, it feels like we're on the last year of either a college basketball or a college football coach's stint, where it's just not gone well at all. It's not gone well at all. And it's like, all right, still going to give him one more chance here. I'm going to give him one more week, per se, to try to maybe just look more competitive more than anything. So, all right, let's jump into Lucas Sims here before.
One more quick point. I think we could know how concerned we need to be probably over the next 4 days, really. Because the next 4 days, you got Michael Lorenzen, Dan Dunning, some guy named Matt Waldron, and Johnny Brito. Yeah. Lorenzen and Dunning are solid pitchers, but they're no Nathan Eovaldi. There's a reason Michael Lorenzen couldn't get a contract until like 5 days before the season started, because he's an okay pitcher. So if the Reds don't show some signs of life offensively over the next 4 days, then yeah, I think you can really, really be concerned.
Yeah. Fraley's going to be in the lineup tomorrow, everybody. Let's all take a sigh of relief. He will be in the lineup tomorrow. If he's not in the lineup tomorrow, I won't show up for the show. How about that? That's how confident I am he's going to be in the lineup. Lucas Sims. I have nothing to say about it. He's fine. Threw the ball fine. Guy took a good swing off of him. I know that sounds like that's not good sports talk, Nick, but I'm not going to sit here and fabricate some myth that, oh, Lucas Sims, he's got to be better. Gave up 2 runs, man.
Sims's problem over the last couple of years has been that he's walked too many batters. It's not been that he's given up home runs. Now, he has given up quite a few home runs. I think that was his third already in 8 2/3 innings. But I think that's just a small sample type thing. He's been a very, very good pitcher in terms of keeping the ball in the ballpark really since 2020 as a reliever. His problem's been walks. Didn't walk anyone tonight. So, Marcus Semien, I think, is like 10th at home runs over the last 5 years in baseball. Again, I was honest. I was looking through some of these numbers last night for some of the Rangers hitters. I was like, I didn't realize Marcus Semien was that good. He's a much better player than I really gave him credit in my head for. So, yeah, I don't really have anything on that.
People are going to hate me again for saying it. Just win one game. Just win one of them. I just get me one, guys. That's how I feel about them. This team feels disgusting right now. If you had to convince me right now that I had to watch all 30 teams play the last 4 or 5 days of baseball, if the Reds aren't in the bottom 5 offensively of all the teams in Major League Baseball, then I would be absolutely, utterly shocked. I genuinely would. Now, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe if I had to watch the White Sox play like just 2 or 3 days in a row, I'd be right back to like, man, this is actually pretty good. I like the Reds again. But I just can't convince myself of that. So, you know, we'll find out where it ultimately goes. For those that are looking for tickets, you know, because if you like low-scoring affairs, no better place than to go to Great American Ballpark. And if you're going to go to Great American Ballpark, you should download the Game Time app. Use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off your first purchase. And you'll also help us out, which would be nice. The other thing you could do, too, is if you want to go watch Low Scoring Affairs in Cincinnati tomorrow night, TQL Stadium. I believe FC Cincinnati is trying to, is there a fancy term for winning in American football? Not by American football, excuse me, football, not American football, soccer. Do you know any fancy terms? No?
I do not.
No, me neither, because I don't know much about that sport. Tally? Maybe they're supposed to get on tally on the board? Anyways, if you're looking to go down to TQL or maybe concert or who knows what, Paul Brown Stadium at some point, Download the app. Use the code Cincy, C-I-N-C-Y, and get $20 off. Daily Ellie's on the rundown. I mean, listen, the guy's our only offense. And I'm proud of Ellie because, God bless America, I'm talking about the fan base, I guess. Fan base is just killing this guy, absolutely killing this guy. And genuinely one of the few bright spots this team has right now. So.
Yeah, I didn't have anything else for the second page, and we kind of talked about Ellie, so I don't have anything else.
Perfectly fine. TJ Friedel, you had mentioned he's going to go to rehab. I don't know if you have anything else to add from that, but you had mentioned it before, really quickly, before you jump into this. It's not so much that he's going to come back and, oh my gosh, look at this offense. We're going to be perfectly fine. TJ Friedel's back. But I do think that there's like a domino effect of this lineup. Sometimes we do get scoring opportunities, right? And the scoring opportunities fall in the hands of some guys that just aren't that great. They're not that great offensively. That, quite honestly, probably, you know, hopefully with one more person in the lineup, you start to find yourselves in positions where that's not the case. So that, and he plays pretty damn good defense. So I don't know when you said next week he starts.
They said midweek. Next week, the Louisville Bats, I think they said that's where he's going to go. They are in St. Paul next week. So they said midweek. They don't play on Monday. So, I mean, maybe it's just when they start the series. I don't know. Maybe it's a second game. But, yeah, that's exciting. I mean, TJ Freer looks pretty good. I'm not sure I'm going to really give him a ton. They're like, you call him every day, TJ. Hey, you think you're ready, buddy?
Yeah.
I think you said it. You said it best. It's just the domino effect. But let's not forget, TJ Friedel was the Reds' leader in wins above replacement last year. Yeah. This guy's a really, really good player, really valuable player. It doesn't show up every single day, but it over 162. TJ Friedel's presence is really big for this Reds team.
All right, moving forward here. Speaking of obviously midweek stuff, we have Reds MILB. I'm sure that you'll get into it, but it was interesting to see that Mike Ford got pulled. Don't know if it means anything other than maybe he was feeling sick, or maybe he got hurt, or maybe he's perhaps packing his bags to where he might find himself on a Major League Baseball team here relatively soon. But Reds MILB, Nick, anything that you got around the farm?
Yeah, quite a bit of action. Everything has gone final, as you would expect, at 11 o'clock at night. Triple A, Bats lost 11-8 to Nashville. Another rough start for Connor Phillips. 11 hits. That's pretty surprising to see from Connor Phillips. 11 hits, 8 earned runs, so a tough start from him. Ian Jabeau looked really good his first time back on his second rehab stint. Not so much tonight. He walked 3 batters, didn't make it through an inning. Re-signs 2-for-4 with a walk. Peyton Burdick, apologies for not getting your face on here. This is the guy the Reds just got from the Orioles. He reached base twice, so that was good to see. Chattanooga Lookouts. I think times are tough for the Reds. They are 4-14. They lost 7-5 to Birmingham in 10 innings. Chase Petty gave up a lot of hits. 7 hits over 5 innings, 3 runs, walked 2, struck out 5. Zach Maxwell, another incredible performance from him. Got 4 outs, didn't walk anyone. Not a lot of run in 7 1/3 so far this year. 14 strikeouts in the 7 1/3 innings. Tyler Callahan, he's really struggled. A prospect that was getting some excitement around Reds prospect folks. He did hit his first home run of the year, so that was good to see. Von Johnson also hit his first home run of the year. And Austin Hendrick stole 2 bags, so shout out to you, Austin.
How the hell did he get on base?
I have no idea. It must have been errors. I mean, there are so many errors in these minor league games. That's if you're ever in doubt, how did they get on base? It was probably an error. Dayton, they won 14-10 over Lansing. Dragons collected 20 hits. They improved to 8-11. A lot of good performances in this one. Rhett Lauder, 6 shutout innings, only walked 1 batter, struck out 9. He's got a 1.86 ERA through his first 4 professional starts, 20 strikeouts and 6 walks. So, if you want to go see Rhett Lauder, you better see him soon because he's not going to be in Dayton much longer. Sal Stewart, reached base 5 times, improved his on-base percentage up to .455, hit his second home run of the year, also doubled. Good night for him. Cam Collier was just 1-for-6, but lots of good performances all around. Hector Rodriguez, 3-for-5. Carlos Jorge, 3-for-6. Homer and a double. Jay Allen was on base 3 times, 2-for-4. And Leo Balcazar was 3-for-5. And then lastly, the Daytona Tortugas, they lost 2-0 to St. Lucie. They only got 3 hits in this one. They fall to 10-9 on the season. Only thing of note, Alfredo Duno, my man, got a double. There you go. There's your Reds MILB.
Let's do it. We'll get into it. Because you know what? At this point, what's next? You know? Who, what, when, where, and why? And God, please convince me as to why I think this might change.
They're going up against Michael Lorenzen. He's only made 2 starts so far this year. He's walked 8 batters in those 2 starts, just at 11 innings. So hopefully that really rears its ugly head on Saturday on Fox, national TV game for the old Cincinnati Redlegs. And this will be Michael Lorenzen's first ever start against the Reds. So that's interesting to watch. Candelario and Espinal, the only active Reds that face Lorenzen. He didn't sign with the Rangers, like I mentioned before, until March 22nd. So he was late to the year. And then Hunter Green went a season high, 7 innings in his last start. He's never faced the Rangers in his career. Only Ranger that's faced him is their backup catcher. So, yeah, big start for Hunter Green. Be nice to see him, you know, build off of his last start when he did get deep into the game. Be nice to see pitch deep into the game and limit the runs. And, you know, all due respect to Michael Lorenzen, one of my all-time favorite Reds. I'd like to see him get shelled tomorrow.
And I would say as well, you'd like to think that at some point Hunter Green has to win a baseball game. Not that that's
and get run support.
Kind of my point. It's not so much his fault. I'm saying in general, yeah, you'd like to think just naturally at some point you luckily run into a win. You know, when your team scores like 1.7 runs per every start that you run out there, pretty hard to win baseball games. But I'm gonna try to be optimistic. You know, like I've battled it all night. You know, I watched really bad offensive play. Just the world's worst offensive maybe performance. Outside of getting no hit, maybe a perfect game would be worse, but you get my point. So here's the deal, guys. We're going to be back better than ever tomorrow. Many of you are in here just grinding out with this. I see the chat. You guys are down too. At least there's not really, we're not fighting each other tonight. We're just complaining about, you know, what we watched, and that's fine. I'm all for that.
All right, well, thanks so much for listening to today's episode of Chatterbox Reds. Can't tell you how much we appreciate all of your support this season. The podcast just continues to grow, and that is thanks to everyone who's been a faithful listener, all of those who've told your friends about Chatterbox Reds. You've left us 5-star reviews. You've subscribed. You've done all the things we've asked, and I can't thank you enough. You really make what we do here at Chatterbox Reds special, so thank you once again. We will see you, as mentioned, Chatterbox Reds live on YouTube. We'll be live about 6:30 on Saturday night, recapping hopefully a Reds win on national TV on Fox. So looking forward to watching the game, getting to see a national broadcast, national perspective on the Reds. Hopefully they're able to give a good performance. And of course, if you missed that, we'll be podcast be up bright and early on Sunday morning. Well, hope that you have a fantastic Saturday. We'll talk again soon. Go Reds.